You could have heard this episode 48 hours early on our Patreon, patreon.com/indieheadspodcast. By joining us for as low as $1 a month, you'll receive episodes early, gain access to our Discord server, and get yourself an Indie Heads podcast sticker. All of our upcoming episodes we open on our Patreon, 48 hours before it hits our public podcast feeds. But if you hear this via our Patreon feed, we thank you so much for your support. We especially want to thank our Real Ones patrons, including Becca Tien, Georgia Mikowski, James Boss, Marcy Anime, Chance Holdup, Delaney Mothman, Josiah Duncan, Jenna, Matt Cameron, Grant the Back of My Dragula, Nicole Rifkin, Tim's Discount Prices, Parker Gross, Andrew Grieve, JP, Rena Castigar, Ian, Matthew Taylor, I Like Books, Sarah Moore, Griff, Max Kebazinski, Mark Berry, Cal 50, Come with the Penis, Chris Wade, Midwest Maxwell, Jake Wald, Grant, Keep Autism Weird, Rob Marino, Max, Dylan, Zach, Gavarandy Freak, and Maze Farms. To become a Real One, consider supporting us for $5 a month on Patreon. Receive a bonus episode every month and get a shout out at the top of the pod. Anyways, though, enjoy the episode. Before we begin this episode, everybody, it's been a while since we've done like a proper cold open, but we are doing this to call out the one and only Gavin 490 Freak, who is supposed to be on this episode, this Austin Powers themed episode. If you know Gavin, Gavin is a big Austin Powers fan, or so we thought, but turns out that is not the case. He is a fake Austin Powers fan, everybody. He's a fake Austin Powers fan, as we've had this episode on the books for at least 2 months now. We've actually had to push it back.
This is like a couple month times late. Yeah.
Now. Yeah, this is, we were supposed to do this a month ago, but we had to push it back for a variety of scheduling reasons. And so Gavin knew all these scheduling changes. We were supposed to record this, I think, on Wednesday, and then that got pushed back. So we're recording this now on Saturday, so this episode is going to be a day late, which I apologize to everybody for. But again, it happens. It is what it is. But Gavin knew full well that we were recording this tonight. I literally told him in our personal group chat that we have for this episode, and also in the Patreon Discord, which you can literally see my messages calling Gavin out, being like, you better show up for the Austin Powers episode that we're recording tonight. And he seemingly did not see or ignore that message, because once again, fake Austin Powers fan. But
not very shagadelic of him.
Not very shagadelic. So I'm going to leave the floor to you guys if you want to call out Gavin even more than me, since I didn't even make this playlist. This is a Natalie playlist. So the floor is yours, guys, if you want to continue to
not very groovy,
Gavin.
Baby.
Yeah. Hey, Gavin, it's your brother, Grant. The Dr. Evil to your Austin Powers, if you will. Or so I thought before today. Apparently, you might just be the mini-me after all. You are the one that showed me Austin Powers. You made me watch Austin Powers for the first time in your former boss's apartment. You made me watch all three of them in one night. They were pretty good. You know, comedies aren't usually my thing. I'm into the spookies. I'm into the Draculas and the Frankensteins and the Wolfmans. But I got down with the Shagadelic, and I kind of understood your mindset. So I thought we would come in here and we would bond as brothers the way Dr. Evil and Austin Powers do in the third and final Austin Powers film, Goldmember. I thought that was going to be us, but apparently you're holding the podcast hostage for $1 million because you don't want to show up. Your ass is away. It's frozen in ice or whatever happened to Austin Powers. I haven't seen them since we watched that. The movie.
It was cryogenically frozen.
Yes.
Cryogenically frozen in the 1960s.
Okay. Yeah. You're not shagadelic. You're not groovy. And you're a little bitch, and I don't respect you, Gavin. You're out of the family. I'm sorry.
Gavin. Pick up your Swedish penis and larger pump, please. It's just sitting here.
Yeah, pick it out on the way out. Put it in your box. You've been laid off from the Indie Heads podcast, Gavin, for your for not showing up for this episode. But if you want to be rehired, just hit me up. We'll see what we can do. We'll have to put you through a trial if you want to rejoin the Indie Heads podcast from here. So. Maybe, you know what? I think the trial of Gavin 490 Freak, Grant, I think, you know what we should do?
What's that, Matty?
We got to make him watch all of Twin Peaks.
We got to make Gavin watch Twin Peaks to be
that
back
be
on the podcast.
Yeah. And,
you know, otherwise, banned BANNED from the Indie Heads podcast. But, folks, let's get into it. I'll be hive. It's an episode of the
Indie
Heads podcast, everybody. Everybody, welcome back to the Indiots podcast. We are back from our little break, although of course we did put up the young boy type shit episode for everybody, so hopefully you enjoyed that bonus episode. And if you want to hear more of them, patreon.com/indieheadspodcast, because again, they're not all gonna get unlocked eventually, so you know, you gotta join $5 a month. But I'm here with Natalie, I'm here with Grant. And Natalie, why are we here?
We're here because of a really dumb bit that I made.
That's like all of our episodes,
gonna,
to be fair.
I'm going to say this right off the top of the bat. I kind of like put this together with like absolutely no thought. And every single time it was coming up as we were pushing it back, I'm like, God damn it, I have to actually do this shit for real. We're here because I'm going to pull up the actual like source material of this while Grant is doing their introduction as well. But essentially what happened here is somewhere in the podcast records, somebody was mentioning that we should jokingly do a podcast on Austin Powers. Like that was going to be where the de-evolution of the podcast, as we get further and further from a podcast about music and into a podcast about whatever dumb insane bits we want to do, was going to eventually take us. And on the spot, I just put together a list of like jokingly a bunch of songs that were going to be on here. I think at some point I said that the Soul Bossa Nova would be on here 3 times, which I did kind of eventually do, but I realized that there were enough songs from Austin Powers that you could do to make an Austin Powers podcast. And so, like, what is the great unifier between all of us and all of our interests? That's right, it's the man who makes us Randy, baby. So we're gonna get into the music of the Austin Powers movies and probably just talk about Austin Powers.
Of course. Oh God, so that was loud. Hang on, let's yeah, that was a little loud.
A hang on, we're too soon.
Hold on. All right, Greg, go ahead.
So, Austin Powers as a character is a man who is out of time, doesn't know where he is, and I wanted to stay true to that and embrace my inner Austin Powers in an effort to get more shagadelic. I have not done my hair today. I'm wearing my glasses instead of my contacts. Visual bit on an audio podcast. Take a hit from your bingo card. But
yep.
And also, just to feel the fish out of water, I did not listen to a single song on this, playlist.
To be fair, if you've watched the Austin Powers movies, most of these will not, like,
I assumed that we'll be listening to a lot of Soul Bossa Nova, and I assume most of these are just what Gavin listens to in the fucking car when he's not blasting Fish or the Family Guy theme. Which are two things that are commonly on in Gavin's car. But I am excited to see what is on this playlist. Shout out to my boy Austin and Dr. Evil and Felicity Shagwell and Mini-Me, Foxy Cleopatra, Goldmember, and all the homies back in the lair.
Yep. So, of course, we got to kick it off with the song that started it all, Soul Bossa Nova, Quincy Jones, which is... It is crazy that this song was, like, that came out years, like, decades before the Austin Powers movies. Like, that's insane to me that, like, they just found this song, and like, all right, this is going to be the theme of our movie, even though it came out 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Because, again, in your head, you hear this, and you're like, you hear this, and you're feeling horny, baby. You're feeling proper Randy, baby.
Yeah, this being the theme song to one of the most successful comedy franchises of all time, to the point where it is now just like, you hear this song and you can't not think Austin Powers, is kind of insane, considering this is a song from 1962. This has, I just learned this shortly before recording, has fucking Lalo Schifrin, like famous like composer for like a bunch of Academy Award nominated movies, on piano. Quincy Jones recorded this in 20 minutes. Like, this was literally just like a crapshoot song. And just because, I pulled up this very brief, like, oral history of Austin Powers, literally this song only exists in Austin Powers because Mike Myers was like, hey, I worked with Quincy Jones on SNL, like, 7 years ago. Let me just hit him up about, like, this song because it sounds like it could be in a James Bond-type movie.
That rocks so much. This song is so ubiquitously Austin Powers at this point that it's crazy to think that it wasn't like an original score piece. Like, not since Falling by Julie Cruz has something been made for a piece of media like this.
Yeah.
Yeah, truly.
It is, yeah. It's genuinely insane because, like, this is just, as a piece of composing, like, so, like, all killer, no filler. Like, there's nothing in here that, like, it's just, you hear this and you think wacky, like, comedy. Like, I don't know how anyone heard this in 1962 was like, yeah, this is groovin'. This is groovy, baby.
Yeah. It's such a goofy little song. I guess I need to mention Halloween 2020 since Gavin isn't here. For Halloween 2020, my brother was Austin Powers for Halloween. You may remember on the Hello stream, he dressed up like Austin Powers for a little bit. That was his costume. I was dressed like Sam from Trick or Treat, and we had a little like candy zipline to get candy to children because of COVID. I won't mention COVID further to get the episode demonetized for disinformation like the KISS episodes were. But,
Gotta be careful.
Gavin was dressed like Austin Powers and he was blasting this on his phone and just dancing in the yard. And trick-or-treaters would take one look at what was up there and they would just keep walking on the sidewalk. They did not want to come up to our house. They're like, no, I'm good. I don't want to deal with this horny pervert.
those trick-or-treaters need a beehive, baby. Oh, they need a beehive and get some candy, baby.
We've dropped the idea that we're going to just be doing Austin Powers impressions like pretty quickly into this.
I mean, again, it's an Austin Powers scene episode. You gotta do the impression.
We do.
At multiple points. We kind of have to.
Yeah, it's... God, can you imagine if we had tried to keep it up like all the fucking way through? Genuinely, I wanna, since Grant talked about like their introduction to Austin Powers, I feel like Maddie and I we should use this opportunity to talk about our experiences, because I was just telling this to my girlfriend Abby, who has never seen an Austin Powers movie in her life, has only just seen isolated like scenes and references. I was playing this playlist around her, and like this was basically like a foreign language to her, but like to me it was like, again, like the kind of like lexicon that I grew up on in a lot of ways. It was the kind of thing where like somewhere between the ages of like 8 and 10, my best friend at the time, like I would go over to his house and watch like DVDs of PG-13 movies, which I was not allowed to at the time. And I distinctly remember like watching these and just being like, these are the funniest movies I'm ever going to watch. Like this was the pinnacle of comedy to like that brain, even though I probably understood maybe only like 25% of the jokes. And it's just that, yeah. that's the platonic ideal, is like Austin Powers is a movie that like appeals to the childish part of your brain, and the more you understand about it, the less you enjoy it. But also it's like International Man of Mystery is still good. I'm gonna go to bat.
Still good movie. Still good movie. I would still say it mostly holds up as I've only seen the first one in full, and I've seen bits and pieces of the next two.
Maddie.
I know. It's not very Randy of me, baby. It's not very Randy, but the first movie, I think, is, yeah, I think classic comedy. Although I will say, when it comes to Mike Myers, my preference of choice is going to be Wayne's World always. I think Wayne's World is a classic. That's just Wayne's one World's of the best comedy movies
Amen.
Ever made. And maybe that could be a future episode, a Wayne's World themed episode, but we'll get there when we get there. But still, first movie holds up. Even the deleted scenes
yes.
in International Man of
yes.
Mystery are iconic.
Glad we're talking about this.
I mean, the steamroller one is
of course, yes.
hilarious. Where, of course, famously, is it? It's the guy from Mad TV. It's like Michael. I want to say Michael McDonald, but I don't think that's correct. I'm gonna double check.
He is one of the gay couple guys in Halloween Kills, by the way.
Oh yeah,
that is correct. Yeah. Yes. He also plays Stanley from Mad TV. The kid.
Yeah,
Michael McDonald. I was correct. So Michael McDonald, of course, there's a great deleted scene where it cuts to his wife and child at their home, and they're both so happy because he got this new job and things are going really well. And then she has to answer the phone and find out that her husband was killed via steamroller in one of the most easily preventable deaths in movie history, which is why it's so great. It's it's so funny that scene like predicted the one scene in Prometheus like 15 years mm-hmm. before Prometheus came out, where everyone's like, why are they going for it? Just go to the side, go to the side. Like, they did that first 15 years before.
What's beautiful about this deleted scene is specifically, this is, to my understanding, scenes that were cut for the American release of the movie, and in the UK release of the movie, there's an entire running gag in which every time a henchman is killed, it cuts to a different group of people who know them getting news about the henchman's death. Because there's another one where it's like Rob Lowe and a bunch of his like friends are like celebrating at a bar, and it's the guy who gets his like head bitten off by the shark is
oh god, yes. Yeah, that one's also, which is funny because Rob Lowe of course would later show up in is it the second or third movie or both?
Yeah, he's in the second one because it's when they go back in time to the 60s mm-hmm, and he plays the younger number two.
Yes. Okay. Austin Powers, Rob Lowe. Let's see if that'll pop up. The Alan Parsons Project. That's not it. You idiot. I wanted to.
Yeah, the bachelor party.
Oh, here we go. John Smith's bachelor party. It's at fucking Hooters too. It's at fucking Hooters. They're drinking Budweisers, which I've got an empty one right here.
Amen.
From a previous recording of an Indieheads podcast episode. I think it was actually the Branson episode this beer is from.
Maddie, that was 2 weeks ago.
I don't come down. The only time that I come down to the basement is to record these episodes, Grant.
Maddie, your ass is going to get cooked on r/male living spaces.
I keep it pretty clean.
You know, Austin Powers would clean fucking r/male living spaces.
Oh, 100%.
It's incredible. Like, this is in a single take. Like, they literally gave no shits about filming the scene.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's dead?
Decapitated by an ill-tempered mutated sea bass? Okay.
Rob Lowe. You can't really call him underrated, but when the man shows up in a comedy, he's bringing gold.
He was decapitated by an ill-tempered mutated seahorse.
Oh my god. Are you kidding me?
To Smitty.
Oh my god. Iconic scene. But let's keep it moving.
Let's keep moving.
Let's go to our next song. It's from Burt Bacharach with I'll Never Fall in Love Again.
This is just one of those things that is like really fascinating to me, is specifically like Mike Myers conceptualizing that like Austin Powers loves Burt Bacharach, which is like not a like weird thing, because like Burt Bacharach had the fucking juice. Like, he wrote some of like the most like incredible pop songs ever made. But it's like these weird bits where it's like essentially the Conway Twitty to like the Austin Powers.
Yeah.
Where it's just like every so often in these movies, it'll just cut to like somebody performing a Burt Bacharach song. In this case, it's Elvis Costello covering the song that most famously is covered by Dionne Warwick. But I love this song. This was one of those weird things where like when I watched The Spy Who Shagged Me when I was like whatever age I was, like before the age of 10, this was just like one of those things where like I didn't understand what was happening. Like, I didn't understand why the movie was breaking here to have Elvis Costello perform a Burt Bacharach song, but there's something so like mesmerizing about it, and it just kind of like stuck in my memory.
Yeah, we should mention, yeah, Elvis Costello is on this song. Again, it's so it's very much specifically like, because it makes Mike Myers laugh, or just sort of like, oh, it's my Mike Myers special interest. So let's kind of check for Burt and Elvis here. It's just a nice song. It's just a nice song. What else can you say?
I figured we should like have something that actually resembles a song before. That's the thing. Is this episode
before we get
playlist,
into
this episode's
before we get
is
to
a
our
fucking
which
roulette wheel of like real songs and then
yeah, we're playing
fake
Austin
songs.
Powers roulette.
Yeah,
which is kind of just like what the soundtracks of these movies are.
Yeah, it's like you get some again. In preparation for this episode, I also listened to at least whatever popped up on Spotify. The original soundtrack for the first Austin Powers movie, which has a ton of really awesome songs from like a variety of acts. There's a great song from the Cardigans, BBC by Ming T, who I believe is
they're coming up
on the next one. Obviously, I Touch Myself, which honestly, that's one where I'm like, you should have put Divinyl's I Touch Myself on this episode.
I feel like that song lives outside of Austin Powers enough. But also,
that is true. But that song, that's the first time I heard that song was in Austin Powers.
Fair.
With all the bimbo bots.
Fembots.
Try to seduce.
The fembots.
Fembots.
All the femboys.
Sorry, it's been a little bit.
Gen Z Austin Powers. Gen Z Austin Powers with the fembots.
Here's the thing, though. I thought about this earlier. I did think about this earlier. If you were to like make Austin Powers now, like if you're the same plot point, he would be coming in from what, like he'd be coming in from the early 90s.
Well, that's fucked up. Austin Powers is as far away from the 60s as we are from Austin Powers.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's a lot to think about. But you know what else is a lot to think about? Daddy issues. And Austin Powers, he sure has a lot of them. With our next song, Daddy Wasn't There, which I am just going to say off the jump, the three greatest like movie songs are made, as in like movies, there's like songs that exist within movies, right? Like kind of like this. It's Sky Doesn't Know from Eurotrip. It's That Thing You Do from That Thing You Do. And Daddy Wasn't There from Austin Powers, Goldmember.
Again, this is like one of those where it's like, for like 8-10-year-old Natalie, like this song just kind of like stuck in the memory, because it's just, it is like the kind of like dumb lyricism that only like lands when you're like a juvenile like kid. I'm pretty sure I bought this song and had it on my iPod like way back when. Like, I just listened to this just for fun. Like, it's Daddy Wasn't There. It's he like does a whole like little like refrain where he rhymes a bunch of words and it ends with circumcised. Like, come on, you know what you're getting into. It's a lot of fun. Also a great like 60s pastiche in terms like 60s rock songs,
which I believe this is Ming T as the band.
Yeah.
Of course, now we have like the karaoke kind of little bouncy things popping up just randomly for no reason. Just like, all right. And of course, we just had the circumcision joke. Michael Caine as Nigel Powers as his father.
I'm pretty sure this was the first thing I saw Michael Caine in.
That's crazy, but like it makes sense.
Yeah.
So for years, like I think it took years before I was like, that is the man who plays Austin Powers' father, which honestly, I mean, again, makes sense considering like the man's like 70s work. Like, that was just the role he played.
Of course.
What is Ming T's deal? I don't know if I actually like, let me pull that up.
British. I think their deal is sort of,
they're an American band that fakes being British.
Oh, okay. So an improper British episode is what this is.
Improper.
Oh, and Susanna Hoffs and Matthew Sweet are in the band.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So I guess it's just kind of like one of those like joke side projects, like, oh hey, we love 60s British music, and let's just have a band where we just do that.
Matthew Sweet will return.
Oh no. This is sick.
He'll be in Pod Hero whenever we get to that.
Oh yes. Oh, yes, yeah. He will be.
Pod Hero coming to a podcast.
It will actually happen now that
you.
I'm only working 4 days a week. I'm actually like probably about to put the call out for guests. But yeah,
was this in the movie? In the movie, like this scene was in the movie proper.
Well, it's like an abbreviated version. Yeah. I think it's like a verse and a chorus.
That's what I assumed.
This is a full music video, because they back in the 2000s they would actually do that, where they would actually film a bunch of shit.
Yeah, because you know you got to get your coverage on MTV, or like, hey, you need something for the DVD bonus features.
Exactly.
You know? So
we lost out
again. Top comment, which I agree with. Although this song was made for satire, it's a really good song, and really that's that is the best kind of like satire in music is like, at least in movies like this, it's like the song like actually has to be good. Like that's why That Thing You Do is so good, because it sounds like a song that would have come out during that era. Mm-hmm. Like you could tell me that was a real song and I'd be like, well, yeah, of course, because it's great. And that's why Adam, you know, Schlesinger was such a great songwriter. He
may he rest
knew
in
exactly
peace.
May he rest in peace. COVID-19, we're still coming after you for that. But yeah, Daddy Wasn't There, one of the best movie songs ever made. Like this is one of the best like fake Again, songs made for a movie.
It helps that you have like actual talented musicians like on the in the band. Like you have, they're actually like making music.
Exactly. Again, great stuff. This song outsells I'm Just Kin by Country Mile. Just kidding. I like I'm Just Kin. I think that song is fun in the movie, although it getting being the 50th best song of the year according to Enemy is just like,
that's
you
whack.
Couldn't write a better parody. You couldn't it's like, come on, Enemy. That like if someone was making fun of you, that's what they would do. And you played into it. But let's keep it moving. This next one, I will say, I'm going to call out another person with this one. I did ask our friend of the pod and giant Madonna stan, Rana Cruz. I asked them to write, or not write, to record a transmission for this next song. It was not sent my way. So, Rana Cruz, you're also
not very shaggy.
This is the episode of the podcast where we're making enemies. Like Austin, yes. Powers. I said Austin Powers was the great uniter when we started, but maybe it's the great divider.
It really might be. But of course, our next song, Beautiful Stranger from Madonna.
This is another one where the music video has an elaborate skit at the front, because again, this is the early 2000s. Or no, this is 1999. Jesus.
This is 1999.
Yeah.
A Basil Exposition.
Yeah.
But Austin, whatever you do, don't fall in love. We've already lost 007 and 008.
Well then, Basil, this looks like a case for double OBA.
Great gag. I love that.
Great gag. Double OBA.
This is my favorite song on the playlist. Like, running this back, I was like, oh, this song actually is, like, really fucking good because it's Madonna. It's not late 90s Madonna at the helm. And, like, this is another one where it's, like, kind of just a matter of happenstance where it was... her and Mike Myers were on the same SNL episode in 1991, and they were trying to get a pop star to do a like 60s pastiche like pop song, and she was in this like very competitive running, but like they worked so well together, which is why the music video has both them acting with each other. Apparently he was in character the entire time they were filming this, which is incredible.
Yeah, this song is fucking sick. This song is so good. I think this is kind of where, so I think I've mentioned this. I mentioned this on the Madonna episode, definitely. But just to, in case you didn't listen to that one, for the longest time, it was not until more recent than you would think, I thought Madonna was British. Growing up,
yeah.
I thought that she was British.
Yeah, me too.
Which,
she
to be fair,
yeah,
this is when she was married to Guy Ritchie, and that's when she became British for a period. And, of course, it wasn't until much later that I found out, wait, she's not British. She's from, like, Detroit. Like, what? That doesn't make any... It did not compute in my brain because...
She has a British person's face.
Exactly. Yes. She has... There's no other way to describe it. She just has a very British face. I'm curious if she has, like, any ancestry that comes from Britain. Like, I feel like it has to be that, but, like... I don't know that for sure, but yeah, there was that period there where she was British for like
pretty much
a solid
she was British,
decade.
She was British by like cultural adoption. I feel like we could let the Brits have her for like a couple of years.
Do you think
like
that Austin Austin Powers is the reason that she got that accent?
Probably.
Here's the thing. That's where it probably begins. Like this is where it begins. Like I believe this is before she even like meets Guy Ritchie, and that's really where it really became, where it kind of came out. But this is kind of where it begins. You know, like this is.
Yeah, I want to say with this song, two things, which is, I think like two of the best like pop decisions here are just like when she like hits the vocal register change on the chorus. It's just like one of those like perfect electric moments, and also like the like little da da da's on like the post chorus, which to my mind, like as we're listening back to this now, That is like pre-self-titled Liz Phair, Liz Phair.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Grant, were you about to say something? I'm so sorry.
Oh, yeah. No, it's just Maddie was saying, I thought for the longest time that Madonna was British, and it's just hitting me. It's got to be the teeth, isn't it?
Yes.
It's kind of,
yes.
It's also the teeth. It's a little bit of the teeth. It's a bit of the face.
We're making enemies of the British on this episode. We are really just...
We've been doing that for years.
I mean, Grant. Austin Powers is just making a mockery of the British people, so at this point they're used to it.
Exactly.
It's like, me.
You guys were the... Again, this is what happens. You guys were the top empire for a long time, and you fell, and guess what? You're going to be the butt of jokes for the rest of your existence. Like, it happens. Like, you had your time. It's over.
Yeah.
But also, I should say, this song did come out... At this point, she was already dating Guy Ritchie when this song came out. So
that makes sense. She's won another piece of British culture.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
It is. I miss when like our pop stars would be like funny in this way. Like they would be willing to just like make a complete fool of themselves. I do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's good. To yep.
I do want to have like two very brief like little asides before we move on from this completely, which is like any pop star with like extensive touring, there is like a massive paragraph about this about the first time that Madonna was playing this song live in her tour, which I would like to read off. She performed this on her 2001 Drowned World Tour. Or was the fourth song in the setlist. It began with an introduction by Myers as Austin Powers on the video screens. The singer then asked the crowd, "Do I make you horny?" Parentheses. What if one of Powers' catchphrases? Close parentheses. Before performing the song, costumes for the performance included spiked dog collars, Swarovski crystal encrusted bracelets, and tire tops. Costuming
kinky
stuff.
Kinky shit.
Yeah. Backdrop during the performance displayed scenes from the movie and psychedelic fluorescent whorls. It also featured a lost technician at the end and elements of Soul Bossa Nova, Dim Space Nova, another song from the film soundtrack.
Hell fucking yeah.
On the final tour date, Madonna's then husband Guy Ritchie joined her on stage as the lost technician. So there's that. She's having fun with it, which is a lot of fun. The other thing I would like to share is that my first exposure to this song before I had even like consumed anything Austin Powers related was this one like pop hits compilation thing that came out in what I'm seeing is mid 2000, which is kind of this like weird like it's like the fucking key, like the skeleton key to unlocking my entire like musical taste when it comes to like late 90s, early 2000s shit, because like this is around the time when like Now That's Wild Call Music was also around, but like this thing which is called Totally Hits Volume 2 is full of tracks like Santana's Maria Maria, Christy Aguilera's Genie in a Bottle, Third Eye Blind's Never Let You Go, banger song, Mambo Number 5, Beautiful
Peter?
Stranger, Filter, Take a Picture.
No fucking way.
LFO, Girl on TV, NSYNC,
oh my
Thinking
God.
Of You. REM's The Great Beyond, which is, for my money, like one of their best songs. Sarah McLachlan, I Will Remember You, is the last song on there.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Oh my God.
Nothing but heaters.
Fuck yes.
But yes, this, that. Madonna's Beautiful Stranger was a piece of like my first bits of music of acquiring musical taste. So thank you, Madonna, for this incredible song.
Fuck yes. So let's keep it moving. Let's keep it moving. Our next one. oh, God.
Yeah, here we go.
This is the jail scene from Austin Powers Goldmember. It is Dr. Evil and Mini-Me's rendition of Hard Knock Life. Gentlemen.
I'm so sorry for putting so many videos on here that are basically just full scenes from movies. And we're gonna walk out
the front door. I mean, you kind of have to with these movies, you know.
We kind of have
stuff.
To.
I know guys on crack that makes more sense than you.
Really? Then let me put it
I feel
to
like
way, cause...
the way that I put this, as I was like listening back to this out loud in our home that I share with my wife, is that this scene is the real factor between what makes the first two Austin Powers movies 90s movies and this one an early 2000s movie. And I can't explain why, but it's like specifically this cultural poll, specifically this Jay-Z version of the song, and specifically like the way that this is filmed, like an early 2000s rap video, is just like, it to me feels like how Goldmember is kind of a step out of time in like comedy. I can't explain it.
Yeah, it very much like this is a scene in a movie that exists in a post scary movie universe.
Yes.
Like scary movie. Like I said, when it comes to comedies, like the fact that scary movie, immediately established like this is what 2000s comedy movies are going to be like. Not all of them, mind you, but like this is going to be the general tone that we're kind of going forward with in these movies. And that kind of, it doesn't work. That kind of style of humor does not work for Austin Powers. Like, it doesn't work.
When the entire joke is just a white guy rapping a song.
Yeah.
Which also, again, happens after the Marshall Mathers EP, or LP has already come out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's just, again, you're completely correct, Natalie. Just, it's out of time where it's simultaneously like stuck in the 90s but also trying to adapt to the 2000s. It's in this weird nowhere zone.
It's one of those reasons why like the fabled fourth Austin Powers movie that Mike Myers keeps talking about can never actually happen, because there's no way to actually like get what made the like specific late 90s lightning in a bottle hit with that movie for like any time outside of like when it was filmed and released. Like even Even Spy Who Shagged Me, which is like a late 90s film and is like definitely a step down from International Man of Mysteries, like it is still 90s enough to have like you could see the shape of it a little more.
Yeah.
Anyway.
You're making sense to me. But also you have to factor in of why like a fourth Austin Powers movie wouldn't work. And that I think the number one reason above all else is that Mike Myers is washed. He's completely washed.
Yeah.
He put out that show on Netflix that I heard was fucking awful. And it was supposed to be like his big comeback. And yeah, I heard it sucked shit. Like, Mike Myers, again, he's not good anymore. He's not good anymore. It happens. It happens. It's sad.
Hold up. Do you two remember when Mike Myers came back to host a game show and the entire bit was he was in character as a game show host and they never acknowledged the fact that it was Mike Myers?
Yes.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
What
remember
was that
this
about?
He was playing like a character that was like, it was like the original host of the show or something like that. Let me see if I can find it on Wikipedia.
His fucking filmography is so sad. It's all like Shrek.
The Gong Show.
The Gong Show, which it was a show in the 70s that was brought back in 2017 with hosted by Tommy Maitland, a fictional character performed by Mike Myers. And it was uncredited in season one that it was Mike Myers. It was just doing this weird fucking bit. Show got canceled in 2018, so it just didn't work. And then he did a comedy for Netflix called the Pinta Verate, which I heard was not very good.
Oh, it's a spinoff of So I Married an Expert. I didn't even realize that. No one fucking told me this.
Or, yeah, inspired by conspiracy theories from his 1993 film. I think there's also some connections with, like, other, like, Mike Myers properties.
Of course.
Again, very weird.
Wait, does it bring in the Love Guru shit? Jesus Christ.
It wouldn't surprise me. Let me see.
Oh no, it's his first live action role since that. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Because since then, he's done some stuff since Love Guru. He's, obviously there's been the Shrek movies. He's popped up in some random roles. Obviously, he was famously in Inglourious Bastards and A Blink and You Miss It.
He's great in Inglourious Bastards. I'm not afraid to say it.
Yeah, he's very fun in that movie. Obviously, he pops up in Bohemian Rhapsody, which is a fun little cameo because, Wayne's World, even though that movie sucks shit. And then, he popped up in fucking Amsterdam.
It's
which, like, fuck.
Jesus, yeah. Wasn't he in a fucking, like, DoorDash commercial as Wayne from Wayne's World?
Yeah.
Yes, he did pop up. They did bring back
Done, like, Wayne in a number of, like, Super Bowl commercials at this point. It's, like, the thing that he kind of goes back to. It's, like, he's realized that Austin Powers has, like, kind of had its time and, like, he's sunsetted that character, but it's, like, now he's, like, going all in on Wayne's World nostalgia.
Which is fair because it's a great movie, and yeah. I think the Wayne, the character of Wayne and Garth,
it's,
like
it's his breakout.
They do
for sure.
They do translate really well. They translate really well into the modern age. But let's keep it going. We have our next song called "Dr. Evil" from They Might Be Giants.
Of course,
I'm gonna be real. Before I put this podcast together, I didn't even realize this was They Might Be Giants.
Which, yeah, when I was listening to this episode or listening to this playlist before we recorded a couple days ago. I was like, okay, this is kind of interesting. Like, who did this one? I was like, They Might Be Giants. Like, what? like what? Is this even, like, in a soundtrack? Or is this just, like, they just made a song about Dr. Evil? Like,
no, this is in like, the what? Intro to Spy Who Shagged Me. It plays,
interesting. Okay.
Yeah, it's the theme that introduces Dr. Evil. But, yeah, it's sung by one of the John's wives, Robin Goldwasser, which is partially why I never clocked this as being a They Might Be Giants song. Here's the thing. I was looking at a little bit of every song just to see if there's anything interesting here. This is basically the demo version of the song. They recorded it last minute, and then Mike Myers was just like, yeah, this is fine. Don't change a thing. So they did not... It literally is just like this like unpolished... like. Proof of concept, 60s pastiche. That said,
I don't think it needs anything else. It sounds pretty perfect as is.
Yeah, and it's like for a comedy stinger bit, like you don't need to go like highly produced or anything.
Yeah.
However, this bit from the They Might Be Giants Wikipedia says a producer from the Austin Powers movies suggested rewriting Dr. Worm for this. But this was written instead. Can you they call me Dr. Evil? I need $1 million, Dr. Evil.
I'm not a real doctor, but I am really evil. I can see that working.
Yeah.
It could work. But yeah, this is the fact that this is supposed to be a demo, that's actually shocking to me, because this does not sound like a demo in the slightest. Like, this sounds like a completed song.
Yeah.
Like, kind of, again, great vocals. Again, very similar to Daddy Wasn't There, where it's like, this song could have come out in the 60s and I would be none the wiser. Like, yeah. It's a perfect pastiche of the era, which I think it was just easier to do pastiches, because like at this time the recording equipment hadn't really changed all that much since the 60s. You know, there's still a lot of analog stuff. Mm-hmm. A lot of the same techniques are being used, whereas like nowadays it is a little harder to do like a pastiche. Like, there's that Daisy Jones and the Six series that came out on Amazon last year that is very clearly supposed to be like a pastiche of the 70s, and it's just like, I didn't hear any of the songs, but like I watched the trailer and I'm like, this doesn't feel like the 1970s. Like, I look at this and I'm like, this is not the 70s. Like, this doesn't look like the 70s. It doesn't feel like the 70s. It feels like people doing cosplay of the 70s, which I think is why like a movie like The Holdovers, for example, has like really grabbed people this past year, is because, oh, hey, this is a movie that takes place in the 70s and it feels like a movie from the 70s. Again, I wish we had better period pieces and pastiches of the stuff. Like,
there was just some
more stuff like,
yeah,
this, please.
They were just cooking with like 60s pastiches in the 90s. I was for a further episode of the podcast that will be coming out around June. I was listening to the soundtrack to the quintessential coming out, coming of age film, But I'm a Cheerleader, another 90s
yeah.
camp classic.
Of course.
And I was listening to the opening track, Chick Habit by April March, which is another 60s pastiche. And it does sound like something that Nancy Sinatra would have made. There's something just about these 90s pastiches of 60s culture that is so good. And why don't we have that juice with these endless fucking 80s pastiches that we keep getting even now?
It's to quote my good friend Michael Shannon, culture happens in 30 year cycles and nostalgia. So I feel like we're getting that now. And now we're getting like, I feel like the thing is we're getting all of these like also 90s stuff, because I'm thinking about the fucking Blue like interpolation. Like that is where we are
God.
As a culture.
Oh, Jesus.
And like, you think about that, it's like, we don't have the juice anymore. Something in our culture has just made us totally juiceless at this point.
I wonder what that is. It may be a little thing called the World Wide Web, potentially. But we'll have to you know, do an investigation on that one or somebody else, because that's not what we do here. We're not very good at that kind of thing. We just like to make silly jokes about songs and stuff. And continuing on, we have another rendition of Soul Bossa Nova.
Hell yeah.
Dibs Space Nova from
60s, here I come, baby. Yeah. Again, that's just in the track.
Just baby, yeah, yeah.
Swinging 60s. Yeah, at this point I was just like, what can I do to make this playlist as funny as possible? And it was another version of Soul Bossa Nova. This version fucking sucks.
This
sounds like what is the we literally talked about this on an episode like not even that long ago. The like Brazilian funk? Is that what it is?
Funk version of Seabat is like what it is to me.
Yeah, I was gonna say, yeah. It's this is like one of those like Brazilian funk songs that have like completely unlistenable noise sections that just randomly just fully come into the mix.
This sounds like it was made in Mario Paint. This sucks.
No, literally the fucking, it's like you put a fucking spaceship icon on the like sheet music and it makes the fucking synth sounds the bop 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 bop.
Wii Music ass production.
The fucking echo,
nope.
Like this remix
the fucking
is
little
like
echo thing. It sounds
me.
Like a it sounds like the Find My iPhone noise. Like fucking get the fuck out of here.
Okay, this is I'm gonna be fully upfront. This is one that I put onto the podcast, onto the playlist, purely because I needed another version of Soul Bossa Nova, and I was like looking
for
what versions are. I didn't listen to this before this week, and then I listened to this. I'm like, what the fuck did I put on here? Why does this exist? This
sounds like when you're dicking around with like a Casio at like Guitar Center.
Soul Bossa Nova, RZA's guitar.
RZA's guitar. Well, I know it has
Soul
to be.
Soul Bossa Nova, RZA's version.
Well, those have to be put into a rave DJ together by some brave good Samaritan.
I'll do it I'll do it as soon as we stop. Yeah, this sucks shit. This honestly is like one of the things that has been the most fascinating things of this particular podcast, and it was something I was not even aware of, like how much it sucked it before.
Look,
this week.
I'm just gonna say it. This is what a lot of hyperpop sounds like to me.
Honestly, if you like sped this up by like several BPM and like deep fried it and auto tuned it and just like pitched it up, 100 Gex could go in over this. I was also looking this up because I was like, why is this called Dim Space Nova? I was like trying to see if it was credited to anyone specifically. The Wikipedia article just credits it to Quincy Jones and his orchestra. So like, did he do this? Is he responsible for butchering his own song?
It wouldn't surprise me if he came back to do this. And this is Quincy Jones in the 90s, you know, we're past the peak of Quincy Jones. He probably was like, ooh, you know, like it's supposed to be like a time travel movie. So there's some space stuff in there. Like I got these presets I want to use. And it's like, all right, Quincy Jones, you made Thriller. You did all this shit. Go on. Go ahead and do it.
He's like any producer at that period in the 90s where like he was just fascinated by the idea of like throwing in electronic influences into his work without even like bothering. It's all just like studio experimentation to him, and who's gonna tell him no? Come on.
Mm-hmm.
This is his temporary secretary.
Hey, temporary secretary is fucking awesome.
That's
fucking
awesome. Number one temporary
what if I did
secretary
that? Rave DJ of this and temporary secretary.
Don't you dare compare this to temporary secretary, which is a goddamn Stone Cold classic.
Maddie, I'm a defender. I'm not saying
I know.
Maddie, should I read the top comment on this YouTube video?
Oh, sure. Yeah, go for it.
Okay. Love it. So impressed.
Yeah, what the... Yeah, these are... There's a lot of bot... Like, the first two comments here are, like, bot comments. Like, loving so impressed. It's like, what? And then the one from user JV7RI2... GR5K, hey, which is just great, and it's everything's spaced out. It has the same kind of feeling of the pussy in bio, nudes in bio kind of Twitter bots right now.
If they made an Austin Powers today,
make you Randy.
If they made,
I got nudes in bio, baby.
He would be clicking every single one of those. My pussy in bio.
Oh, he would be.
My computer's got a wicked virus, baby.
I think
we found
iPhone,
this
baby.
This malware's got such negative mojo, baby.
We're gonna write this. We're gonna have this on Mike Myers' desk by tomorrow.
I was gonna say, I think we finally found our hook into making a new Austin Powers movie. We gotta Austin Powers gets a computer virus from some Nazi porno, baby, and he's gotta track down who created the virus before it destroys the entire world.
The second Nat said Femboy bot, we had the hook to this.
We can totally do this. What the fuck was I gonna say? Shit, I've lost it.
Oh wait, no, I got something. Austin Powers, who is retired from the spy agency, has to return to the force because he's gone bankrupt due to OnlyFans.
Oh my yes.
He spent too much money on OnlyFans, baby, because they make him horny, baby. They make him horny.
What was I supposed to do? And not give money to a foxy lady? Yeah, baby.
Did you hear about this January 6th, baby? I've heard about some ins erections, but I thought it was something else, baby. That's not very shagadelic what they did at the Capitol.
Whoever is like scamming Austin Powers and phishing his info based on the faulty links that he clicked is trying to blackmail him by revealing to the world that he uses the Swedish penis and larger pump.
I mean, really, this is basically just the plot of the new Jason Statham movie, The Beekeeper, but just put Austin Powers in there instead of Jason Statham as the beekeeper. Just make it, just do that movie, but just have it be Austin Powers.
You know, Dr. Evil's ass is working at SpaceX.
Or again, Elon Musk, he unmasks himself to reveal that he's Dr. Evil. Again, we have so many ideas. Mike Myers, please hit us up. We have so many ideas. We can make this happen.
We will write this movie for you,
yeah,
Mr. Myers.
Yeah,
we will.
I am honestly, I'm not going to beat around the bush. Like, I honestly, the more we talk about it, the more I'm like, oh, this is a really good fucking idea. I can probably, I can probably get rich off this shit.
So now that you're only working 4 days a week, I mean, hey, you got time to crank out the screenplay.
I'll find Mike Myers' address. Mike Myers, we have your home address, and we're going to use it to send the Austin Powers 4 spec script to your door.
CanCon, get on it.
And it would be CanCon, because Mike Myers is famously Canadian, so Canadian content.
Exactly. Cool.
But let's keep it moving. Once again, Burt Bacharach with What the World Needs Now Is Love.
This is not the version that appears in the movie, but I just wanted to include a version of the song. This is another one of those where it was like whatever interlude. I did not go back and rewatch any of the Austin Powers movies for research. Fake fan. But this is another one where it's like this, the use of this in, like, I want to say it must be like the International Man of Mystery is just like so burned in my brain forever. Like, it's just one of those things where, like, the thing about Burt Bacharach is, like, he writes those kinds of, like, melodies where, like, you hear them once and you're just, there's, like, burned in your brain forever, and this is, like, one of those for me. I've got nothing to say. This is a good song. This is...
Yeah, great
Burt Bacharach, great songwriter. So I'm gonna use this as a space to say, in the Austin Powers oral history that I pulled up, which is, like, really short. I don't know if it's just short because there's a print version that isn't online that it's a lot longer. But in here, the person who wrote this, blames the first Austin Powers movie performing decently well, but not being like a major like cultural sensation until it hit DVD. And I don't know if this is a common thing that got attributed to it, on the fact that International Man of Mystery came out, and then shortly thereafter, Princess Diana got in a fatal car crash.
Oh my god! That's not very shagadelic.
Like, can you imagine? It's... Again, the 9/11 of its time, like, nobody wanted to go see Mike Myers parade around as a British person while the entire nation was grieving. How dare he make a mockery of their bereavement?
Oh my, could you imagine the amount of British chud races, like, the kind, like, Turf Island type beat that would get so mad at Austin Powers if it came out today and be like, they're making a proper joke out of me.
That would...
God.
I want that. I want there to be a whole thing. There should have been a whole thing where, like, Mike Myers shouldn't have even, like, talked about, like, being in character. He should have just paraded it as, like, I'm an actual British person. And Mike Myers, and, like, it should have been a whole scandal where it was revealed that he's, like, playing fake British. Like, that should have been a whole controversy.
Genuinely, if you get Mike Myers to say the phrase, trans women are women, in Austin Powers 4, England will be on fire by the end of the movie's release weekend.
And good. That country needs the fucking burn.
Okay,
so
what you're saying is I need to include this as a line in the script.
Yes.
Yes.
Let's do it.
Again, in our woke Austin Powers screenplay.
Woke
though,
Austin Powers 4.
Woke Austin Powers. Which, here's the thing with Austin Powers. He's been woke since the beginning, you know? He's always been woke. Mm-hmm. He is canonically a communist, or at the very least, willing to be a communist or communist sympathizer if it, you know... Gets him horny, baby.
He's
gets
certainly
some purple randy, baby.
More enthused about being a communist than he is about being a capitalist. Like, he is such a,
facts.
Like, he like limply goes along with the capitalism thing, but he's like so rare and ready to be a communist.
Do you think he just
yes.
gets it, or he does it just to get girls? Like, he's on some Obama shit, though.
I knew you were gonna say that. I mean, I think it's a little bit of both. It's sort of like,
is Obama,
you know, here's the thing.
Austin Powers?
I mean, considering how many people try to do impressions of him, I mean, you gotta consider it. You gotta put him up
that
in the pantheon.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Although at the same time, you could say that about Trump too. I feel like the Trump impressions, like Obama impressions, were really popular. Trump impressions, whole different level. Everyone has a Trump.
Ranking,
you know,
every U.S. president by how much Austin Powers vibes they have. Like, at the top, you gotta have Bill Clinton,
oh,
right?
Of course. You gotta have Bill Clinton. Number one horniest president
Kennedy,
of all time.
Kennedy's up there, especially
Kennedy's
for doing, like,
Kennedy
voice
number
impressions.
Two.
Yeah.
Kennedy number two, I'm actually going to say for number three, I'm going to say Lyndon Johnson, honestly. Lyndon Johnson, which if you know anything about Lyndon Johnson, you know that dude was filthy. He was famously very filthy, just like Austin Powers, you know, where he's very, very open about things that he should not be so open about. I think you can look up stories about Lyndon Johnson. So I'm going to put him as my number three. Four, probably Trump. You could say Trump for number three. But I think it's Bill Clinton for sure, number one. Bill Clinton and Kennedy, those two, 100% for sure.
Maddie, speaking of JFK, I was supposed to bring this up on the Same Fucking Song Again playlist. I'm so sorry. I have to talk about this. So just a brief aside...
Okay.
My mom was telling me recently, I was talking about Chubby Checker with her, and she said, oh, yeah, me and my brothers and my family, we had the twist on a 45 when we were kids, because my your grandpa, my dad, he worked at a bar, and he would change out the records on the jukebox. And when they were done with them, I would be able to get the records because my dad would bring the old ones home, and we had that one and we loved it. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. You would just get these free records. And she was like, yeah, it was the club that Jack Ruby owned, the guy that killed Lee Harvey Oswald. And I was like, what the fuck? You had
Paramore is crazy.
You
Paramore
had
Jack
crazy. Ruby's Chubby Checker record when you were a kid. She was like, yeah, we would listen to the twist. And I'm like, no, fuck the twist. You're Grandpa worked for the guy that killed Kennedy's assassin?
Jack Ruby was down with the chub.
Jack Ruby was doing the... I forgot to bring that up on the episode, but I just remembered it. I'm so sorry for getting us off track from Austin Powers, but Shagadelic 60s, you know?
Mm-hmm. I mean, you could say in many ways that, you know, Lee Harvey Oswald did the twist when Jack Ruby shot him.
Jesus,
you know, he definitely twisted a little bit.
Jesus
there, getting
Christ.
Shot in the gut. But let's keep it moving. Once again, Soul Bossa Nova, but this one is a much better version of it because
yeah.
This is... Oh, wait, no, this is not... Well, this one's good, but this is not the one.
No, I did have to throw this one on last minute when I found out that it existed. This, I did not realize this existed until like maybe about a month or two ago, but this is another, not the, but another song that samples Soul Bossa Nova that Ludacris is on. And if you listen closely, he does say the words number one spot in this song, because this song was made for like Quincy Jones tribute album in 2010. And so this was like a few years after number one spot. So he's like still obsessed with Soul Bossa Nova. Like this man is like, he's like us. He's so committed to one bit that he just keeps it going for years and years and years.
It's the same fucking song again.
And we should mention, this is the beat is being redone by an a cappella group.
Yeah, this is
Naturally 7.
This owns. I'm not afraid to say it.
This is the way this is a cappella and Austin Powers. This might be the first produced GavMax Enterprises joint that I've ever seen.
I was gonna say, yeah, Dartmouth Aries. Is that what the
yes, the one that did Club Can't Handle Me?
Of course. And this has like a professional ass music video too. Like this is not like we are watching a full ass high production value music video. They got Ludacris, they got Quincy Jones himself in the house. Oh my god.
He's referencing like other Quincy Jones joints. Ludacris understood the assignment.
We'll get into it a little more when we get to another song later on, but man, we really need, like, I think this is why, like, DaBaby was such a breath of fresh air when he initially popped on the scene, was that, like, oh, cool, we have, like, a guy that understands that Ludacris is awesome and is trying to, like, have some of that energy. Then, of course, you know, DaBaby got canceled, and now the closest person that we have to Ludacris now is, like, Jack Harlow, and it's like, Jack Harlow doesn't have the swag of Ludacris. Get the fuck out of here.
Maddie, no. You said the words DaBaby, and my brain just went, oh my god, he used to be famous, didn't he? Like,
yeah.
Genuinely, he fucking disappeared.
Here's the thing, he's still around, he's still somewhat popular. He just popped up on the Mexican OTs album, that's getting a lot of buzz in hip-hop circles right now. But yeah, DaBaby, like that's a case where it's like one of the most easily avoidable cancelizations ever. Like, all he had to do,
unforced error.
He for some reason decided in like what 2021, like I'm gonna go be I'm gonna be like in early 90s style homophobe.
Yeah.
Like I'm gonna do fucking Tribe Called Quest shit. And like, I'm gonna do that, but you know, on stage at like Lollapalooza or something like that. And here's what he could have done. He'd be like, hey, I apologize to the gay community. Here's this much money for, you know, charity, yada, yada. Could have just done that, moved on. That would have been it. But he doubled down for some reason. He doubled down and that was it. You know, like, DaBaby as a hit maker was over. Like, his music was already becoming pretty bad before then, but, you know, it's just, again, one of the most easily avoidable cancellations. Whoever his PR person at the time was, I assume they're like, what the fuck happened there? You know, huge blunder. Huge unforced error.
I think this might be my favorite song so far of the week. This is sick, actually.
Madonna. This is so good. This is Madonna is my number one. This is my number two. Like, genuinely, this is like the best discovery that came out of this. Like, for me, is learning that like Ludacris is responsible for two really genuinely great songs that use Soul Bossa Nova. And I'm with Maddie in that between those two, I'm like convinced like, oh, Ludacris is fucking awesome now. Purely because he understands Austin Powers better than anyone else. When we write the Austin Powers 4 script, Ludacris will get a cameo in that movie.
Absolutely.
He needs to get rewarded for his service to this man and his legacy over several years.
He'll be like the young protege that takes over for Basil Exposition.
Or he'll be the person who like takes over for he Dr. Evil gives him like the keys to his empire instead of Scotty or something. I don't know.
Yes, yeah, that's even better.
Oh my god.
They should have a rivalry, definitely. Before we move on, I do want to make a quick note that in the background section on the Wikipedia page for this album, because this is the title track to an album of Quincy Jones decided to basically executive produce this album, where he like handpicked a bunch of people in 2010 to do their own reinterpretations, covers, etc., of songs that he had a hand in making. And he apparently years later did an interview and said, among other things, he threw T-Pain under the bus talking about this. He said, I said to them, you got to make the music better than we did on the originals. That didn't happen. T-Pain, man, he didn't pay attention to the details. T-Pain was covering PYT.
I got to hear this now. I want to hear the T-Pain PYT, because I feel like he would probably kill that song.
I will say this album is not on Spotify. It's
damn.
Let me see if I can find it on at least the T-Pain PYT on YouTube, because I do want to hear
it.
It
also
now.
Has Robin Thicke, which, you know, but.
Okay, yeah.
This is before, like, the really bad association with Robin Thicke, so, you know.
Oh, this kind of goes. Oh.
No.
No.
You know what? I hate to give Quincy Jones points here. Better in theory than in execution.
Not
unfortunately,
T-Pain.
Unfortunately, when I heard the first like bit of autotune, I was like, oh, he might have something here, but it's like, T-Pain, you gotta tone it down a bit.
I hate to go.
Yeah, this doesn't work.
I hate to go up against a Masked Singer winner and a judge, but yeah, this is not good.
Like, again, I the T-Pain autotune, he does great work with it. It just doesn't work for a song like this, unfortunately.
Yeah, no.
So
you
sorry, T-Pain,
is,
but
this is just my teenage dream ending.
Oh my god!
a little bit, yeah. It is definitely hyper pop adjacent for sure. But let's keep it moving if we're good to move on.
We're good to move on. Mm-hmm. We're near the end. These next two are gonna like plow through like nothing.
Yeah. This is a scene from Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me. This is Dr. Evil and Mini-Me's rendition of Just the Two of Us.
Classic.
Classic. A pinnacle, the pivotal moment in The Spy Who Shagged Me. And I think, again, this is like illustrative of my point where like this is a very 1999 movie moment.
Yes.
This is a very pre-scary movie moment. I don't really have anything to say about this. I just felt like we had to include it because
it's essential.
I'm pretty sure
Green
this
with
was
black
like...
hair is fucking me up. Like I knew.
I was gonna say,
like...
can we, Seth Green? Can I say something without y'all getting mad at me? looking at Seth Green in this movie,
Maddie. Yeah.
You ain't mad at me?
No.
Honestly,
I see
Seth
it.
Green, he's kind of serving in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of serving. He's kind of hot.
He has Billy Joe Armstrong energy, which is appropriate based on
which appropriate with our next song.
But yeah, what was I fucking gonna say? I'm sorry, I like took like an entire CBD tincture right before I did this podcast.
Yeah, baby.
Legalize marijuana, baby. Yes, I vividly remember.
Mini-Me having a deep voice, classic.
That was that classic humor.
Can
for
we get
a 10-year-old? Rest
in peace, Vern Troyer, real quick.
Yes. Wait, Maddie.
Hang
you
on.
Let me get
pulled up. All right.
Vern Troyer,
baby!
The guy who gets crushed by a steamroller in Austin Powers' International Man of Mystery.
He got steamrolled, baby!
John Smith.
John Smitty, a.k.a. Schmitty. Death by electric. Death by head-eating sea bass.
Ill-tempered sea bass.
Dr. Evil's dad that Scott Aukerman played in Goldmember.
Wasn't Dr. Evil's... Aren't Dr.
Yeah,
Evil and Austin Powers brothers?
He had a fake dad because he didn't know. It was a whole thing. Or maybe it was Austin Powers' grandpa or something. But
Scott...
hold on. I gotta look this up because Scott Aukerman plays someone's fucking dad in Goldmember.
I was gonna say, while you're looking this up, I half debated getting a cameo from Mindy Sterling for this play for this podcast,
oh
but
my
it was like $60. Unfortunately, like if I,
oh,
I was
a young Nigel Powers.
Nice.
I see.
Oh shit! He's oh my god.
Dr. Evil's not your son. I am.
You both are.
What? It was our first.
I did not realize that Seth Green's hair looks like this in the movie.
Oh,
because
he's turning into Dr. Evil.
Yeah.
Let me see.
Do they even show his face? I don't even think they show his face. They don't even show his face. He's just a body double, I guess. All right. That's a little underwhelming. Which, speaking of underwhelming,
yeah.
I hate to say it.
No,
Green
you're right.
Day espionage. Mm-hmm. I'm going to just let this play through because I have to go to the bathroom. I just expected vocals that would come in at some point, and they just didn't come in. I was like, oh, okay. It's just they're just doing a spy song. Okay. Good for them. Get a check, I guess. I'll be right back.
It's fine.
You're going to need it because we're going to go like 30 minutes on this next one.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
But anyway, when I was putting together this playlist, I was like coming up with, I think it was when I was putting together the initial like bit message in the Discord, I was like trying to come up with 10 songs in order to like hit playlist length. And I asked Abby, I was like running through a list of possibilities and I like came across this as a thing and she was like, oh yeah, Green Day did espionage for Spy Who Shagged Me, because like she's a big, she grew up on Green Day, so I was like, oh cool, I'll throw this in there, having not listened to it at all. And then I played it back, I'm like, oh, it's just this incidental instrumental that sounds like a fucking James Bond like track that they just threw in and is like totally anonymous and isn't even particularly interesting and like, I don't know. Like, yeah. Green Day, you didn't have to do, like, you had the sauce back in 1999 still. Like, you could do better than this. You could, like, put a little more edge into it. I know you were just trying to fit the assignment, but, like, come on.
I also feel like if Billy Joel did, like, actually sing on this, though, it would kind of take him out of the aesthetic they were going for. But they could have punked it up a little, you know?
Yeah, it feels a little like they're being, like, caged in. Like, you mm-hmm. can, if you know it's Green Day, you can kind of hear it, but it's, like, I don't know, it's not the thing that, like, you listen to out of the blue and think that it has any of the identifying Green Day features.
What's crazy to me, looking at these kind of, the Austin Powers soundtracks, is that they don't really have any of the, bossa nova or swing kind of revival that was going on in the 90s. Like, no Cherry Pop and Daddies, no Squirrel Nut Zippers, nothing like that. It's fascinating to me, because I thought that they would be all over this kind of stuff. But, I don't know, Green Day's a weird pick. I wouldn't have picked them.
Yeah, it's strange, because, like, you would think that they would, like, grab somebody who is kind of in that zone, but, like, for whatever reason, they were always going after, like, pop stars and, like, rock musicians, and it just... it never really occurred to them. I think because they were thinking more about, like, the mod era and, like, psychedelic, like, pop rock than they were, like, things with, like, swing and bossa nova. I think that's just a virtue. That's just kind of, like, a circumstance of, like, soul bossa nova being, like, this kind of fits rather than this is the aesthetic we're going for completely.
Yeah, I just
anyway.
Think, like, I don't know. I was talking earlier about Chick Habit by April March, and all I could think was, man... Austin Powers dancing to that would be an incredible fucking scene, but
that should be the that should be part of the opening credits in Austin Powers 4. Is he's doing Soul Bossa Nova, but he's like, we have to like be more feminist, baby, and he starts dancing to Chick Habit.
Yes,
we can do this.
I'm gonna get woke, baby, and he starts dancing to Chick Habit. He's got the pussy hat on.
That's the thing, is this song is fucking like neutered Chick Habit is basically what it is. Anyway, we don't have to talk about the shit anymore. This is not a good song. Sorry to 1999 Green Day, who still had part of the juice. I should also mention this is part of like one of my favorite scenes in Spy Who Shagged Me, which is when Mustafa, played by Will Ferrell, is trying to chase Austin Powers down and gets into the car accident and falls down the cliff and then progressively injures himself further. Great scene.
Great scene.
But anyways, our final song, of course, we alluded to it a little bit, It's ludicrous, number one spot.
I'm going to be real with you. Part of this playlist is just an excuse to get us to talk about number one spot on this podcast, finally.
This song is a fucking banger.
Yes,
this song is awesome.
We talk about this in chat all the time, but we haven't had a chance to get into it on the podcast. This is a genuinely perfect song. This is a, like, beautiful experience of a song where 2 years after Goldmember came out, Ludacris was still so possessed by the spirit of Austin Powers. He was like, the second single of my album needs to be a song that samples Soul Bossa Nova and is full of references to Austin Powers and has Vern Troyer in the music video while I dress up as various, like, things from Austin Powers.
Was this even in the soundtracks for Austin Powers?
No, this came
it was
after
2 years after Goldmember.
Oh my god.
Again,
that's
he
awesome.
Was just, this is just, he's Austin Powers'
fan.
Number one stan.
Yeah, this, I mean, there's really not much. I mean, like I said, Ludacris, again, punchline rappers like Ludacris, again, dime a dozen these days. We need Ludacris, or someone with Ludacris energy back in the mainstream. Again, these Jack Harlows, the DaBabies, they ain't cutting it.
We kind of had it with, like, late 2000s Lil Wayne and, like, early 2010s
yes.
Lil Wayne.
Yes.
Like, I think he was the last one who was, like, really on that beat. Because, like, you look at a song like 6 Foot, 7 Foot, and it's basically, like, doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think part of the reason why, like, I think the internet just really kind of made punchline rap much more difficult. Like, again, it's hard to put my finger on why.
If you do it too hard, you're gonna turn into Lil Dicky, and no one wants that.
Yeah, it's a mixture of, like, yeah, no one wants to be a Lil Dicky, you know, no one wants to be Macklemore, or alternatively, like, in some weird way, Lil B completely changed the way that we look at, like, what we. The influence of Lil B is very positive, but there were some negatives, and I do think, like, he very much, like, sort of took the stylings of, like, a Ludacris or an E-40 and just made them his own and meshed rap forever in his image in a way that I would say is mostly positive, but, again, negative consequences. Negative consequences being we don't have Ludacris anymore. We used to have Ludacris, and now the situation in the lighthouse is Ludacris to me. Personally,
hey, tell him, Maddie.
This is what happens when Ludacris gets too obsessed with being in bad Fast and Furious movies to do his shit anymore.
Which, to be fair to Ludacris, he's getting paid a shit ton of money for those movies.
I
can't blame him at all. Can't blame him.
I do
like movies pay better than music.
I do want to ask everybody what their favorite lyric in number one spot is, because I have mine off the bat, and it was when it came up here. While it came up, I'm like, yeah, this is the best one. I just love the 1-2 of, in court, I never show up like Austin Powers, Faja, father, and hey, I love gold.
That was my, I love gold, quoting Goldmember.
I do like this little bit where he's the fat bastard. I do think that's a good bit where he goes on some fat bastard bars for a bit. Let me look up the lyrics, because it has been a couple days since I've heard
this
song.
A music video that includes just a part of the potion also here too,
which
I actually
the
appreciate.
Potion is sick.
I really appreciate they cosplayed every single character that Mike Myers plays.
Yeah, shouts out, big respect. Again,
true
Austin Powers fan.
Yeah, he's the number one stan. That's why we've got to include him in this movie. I do love the potion beat too. I think specifically the way that Girl Talk samples it in Night Ripper is really fucking good.
Is this a Timbaland beat?
I think.
Let me double check, because I feel
sure
like I remember.
I got the album pulled up.
I feel like
I
remember.
It's Timbaland.
Yeah, I was gonna say, because I feel like I remember that. I think there's the Jay-Z documentary around the making of the Black Album, and I want to say that this beat was played for Jay-Z, and then I think he passed on it, and then it ended up being. Oh, yep, exactly. Was originally supposed to be for "Dirt Off Your Shoulder," got passed to Ludacris for the potion. Again, sick beat, but I think, yeah, the fat bastard line of make music for mini-me's, models and fat bastards. These women trying to get me out my pelly pellies. They strip off my clothes and tell me, get in my belly.
That is a great fucking line. Yeah.
Great bar. Ludicrous, nasty, but great bar.
Ludacris is so fucking good. I'm ready to, I'm ready to say he's sorely missed. We need him back. We need this energy back. Ludacris, can you make us a new song for this movie? We'll call it Number Two Spot, and it'll be all about the character Number Two.
Yes, again, again, Ludacris, we're bringing you back for Woke Austin Powers. Yes. We're bringing you back, babe. We're bringing you back, baby. You're gonna come and be in the movie, baby.
Two final things I have are, I guess, three. In Wikipedia's stats for this, this song was a top 20 hit in America, which is beautiful to me. America, beautiful. Even 2 years removed, was still could not get enough of Austin Powers references and Soul Bossa Nova. Austin Powers, for all we talked about him being a product of the 90s, is timeless and will endure as part of the culture now and forever. And that's why he will be more relevant now than ever in this 2020s Austin Power culture. Number One Spot was up for best rap solo performance at the Grammys and lost it to Gold Digger.
Okay, that's fair. I will say that is fair.
Can you imagine a world where Number One Spot has a Grammy over Gold Digger?
I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, here's the thing. They're both great songs. I can't imagine. I feel like it would have aged a little better, I think, to have Ludacris have that Grammy instead of Kanye. But again, how could we have known in 2005? Mm-hmm. How could we have known? We would have probably, you know, a little later, of course. But back in 05, at most, Kanye was just, oh, this guy's kind of egotistical. Mm-hmm. We didn't think it would go down the way it has in recent years.
Last thing I want to say, and then we can maybe turn this over, the recent story I have with this is back in December when Rose and I finally met up in person for the first time, shout out Rose, in Chicago to go see The Armed. Like, the day that I was like driving her to the airport, I was just like, what do I put on to like start this drive? And the first thing I thought of was fucking Number One Spot, and it was just a beautiful experience where we were just like going through line by line, and just like Number One Spot and Austin Powers bring people together. Like, this is, again, we're bringing it all back. Everything comes back to Austin Powers. Our love for this horny little British man is what like makes the world go round.
Mm-hmm. Facts. But oh, baby, we have been properly tamed. We're behaving, baby.
We have finished.
Here's the thing, Natalie. You can't say this is the dumbest site. We did YouTuber Music Volume 2 and Dark Sided Syncore episodes this year. Geez, we are far from the stupidest idea we've ever done on this very podcast.
This is the darkest realm that the pod. Like, this
feels
is the
like the beginning
year.
Of the end.
but next week. We had to move some stuff around, I believe. Yes, we did move some stuff around because of... why did I move this around? Anyways, we're going to do a bonus episode next. It's going to be our next episode. We probably should have done it this week, but what can you do? It's still after the Oscars. I still think it we're fine to do it. We're doing an LCJ Core episode as our bonus episode next week.
Hell yeah.
To sell, of course, the Oscars. As of recording this episode, the Oscars are tomorrow. By the time this comes out, the Oscars will have already happened. So I feel like preemptively, I'm going to, you know, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Congratulations to Robert Downey Jr., Cillian Murphy, Christopher Nolan. Congrats on all your Oscars for Oppenheimer. I do think that Austin Powers should have probably been in Oppenheimer somewhere. I think they could have fit him in really well. Mm-hmm. Or Nigel Powers, because I feel like that would have made more sense for the time period.
He time travels.
He does time travel,
so he could have time traveled back and prevented the creation of the atomic bomb. I think that would have been a really awesome direction. I mean, if Quentin Tarantino can rewrite history in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I think Christopher Nolan can rewrite history in Oppenheimer by having Austin Powers sabotage the creation of the atomic bomb and sabotage the Manhattan Project. Because again,
Austin.
He was a communist. He is canonically a communist. So I think you could have made something work there. I don't know.
Austinheimer.
Austinheimer, all right, and then again, atomic powers, more like Austin Powers, is what we're shooting for here. But yes,
I have become
Court.
Death Destroyer Worlds, baby.
I'm just imagining Austin seeing the mushroom cloud and just being like, "Oh, that's not very shagadelic, baby." Oh no, they do that bit where the mushroom cloud looks like a dick, and he'd be like, "Oh, that looks exactly like a giant." And then it cuts to
yes.
Cillian Murphy. He's like, "Dick, come look at this bomb."
Oh god, what if it was the Manhattan Project, but instead of making the atomic bomb, they were making the first Swedish penis pump?
Jesus Christ.
International
Manhattan Project of Mystery.
Again, we have Mike. Again, we gotta get the screenplay. We gotta get the screenplay on the books. All right, we gotta do it.
Mm-hmm.
Woke Austin Powers. We're gonna make it happen. It's gonna be a. We have so many ideas. So many ideas of how to reboot Austin Powers. But also coming up, of course, we have Youth Group Music 2 that is coming up later on in the month, along with the long anticipated White Boy Heaters episode that we've been trying to get on the books forever. It was supposed to happen in February, but yeah, it was a bad idea for February, so we saved
Maddie from canceling himself.
Yeah.
Because February was like, we just kept accidentally getting ourselves into hot water potentially. We even did it yesterday. Of course, yesterday, we're recording this on Saturday. Yesterday was International Women's Day, and instead of celebrating the great women in our life, we did an extended riff on Centerfold by the J. Giles Band. We just talked about that song for most of the day. Shouts out to women. Shouts out to J. Giles.
We gotta Centerfold, find out, does she walk? Does she talk? Does she come complete?
Exactly. But thank you everybody for listening to this very shagadelic episode, baby, of the Indie Hits podcast. But we're gonna wrap it up here. Thank you everybody. Is there anything we want to plug before we head out? Natalie mentioned it briefly. Michael Shannon, Natalie did a great, we've got a follow on you Stereogum profile on Michael Shannon about his tour with doing the first REM album. Again, it is crazy that this podcast is now like only 2 degrees of separation away from Michael Shannon. That is incredible.
They're letting me have too much power. I hope to God no one ever listens. No one who gives me work ever listens to this podcast, like thinking like, oh, Natalie is like, she's got the juice. Like, what else is she up to? Because
a music podcast.
Oh. I mean, here's the thing. Music journalism is in a dire state. So I feel like this can't hurt you that much. You know, it can't hurt you more than the music industry is hurting us.
Every music journalist is doing dumb bits on podcasts. Like, if they cancel me, they're canceling everybody.
Exactly. They can't stop us. They can't stop us, baby. All right. We're in a shagadelic 60. I can't do this.
We gotta cut this.
We're done.
Too much Austin Powers impression.
Too much. We are all powersed out here. So thank you everybody for listening to this very special episode of the Indians Podcast. We'll see you next week. Bye bye.
Yeah, baby.
Mrs. Will ya make me tea? Make love to me. Put on the telly. To the BBC. To the BBC. Yeah, yeah, yeah. BBC One, BBC Two, BBC Three, BBC Four, BBC Five, BBC Six, BBC Seven, BBC Heaven. Mrs. William, make me tea. Make love to me. Put on the telly. To the BBC. To the BBC. Yeah, yeah, yeah. BBC One, BBC Two, BBC Three, BBC Four.
William. Let me take my love to me, put on the telly.